If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
I don't care if I make a dollar or $1 million, I got to learn to manage my money. If I can't manage a dollar, I'm never going to manage $1 million.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Colton Lindsay is an active investor and business owner. His focus has been leveraged residual income in multiple asset classes, and his favorite being residential and commercial real estate and leveraging commercial financing. Colton has been in business for 15 years and reached financial freedom by the age of 32. Colton, welcome to the show.
What's up, man? Thanks for having me here.
Dude, it's such a pleasure to have you. I'm excited about today's interview, and I just want to kind of, you know, hear your story. So can you give us an idea of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there?
Yeah, so, I mean, if we kind of take a look at business-wise, I started about 15 years ago in residential real estate. Failed miserably the first year, sold two houses. And then I joined a coaching and training program, started selling about 20-something deals a year. And then to where my peak as a residential real estate agent, I was selling about 75 deals a year. One of the things, though, that I was never taught, right? Like why people get into real estate is passive residual income, leverage. I call it leverage residual income. I don't think anything's really passive. Everything requires some attention. And then I was like, here I am selling real estate. Why am I not getting none of this leverage residual income or passive income at the time? And I realized none of the realtors were actually doing this. So then I had gone through a training program, a couple of them, one called Financial Freedom Fast Track and another one was Millionaire Mind Intensive. And I went through T. Harv Eker's old program. And just within a few short years from going through that, then I created what I call financial freedom. And that's where my leveraged residual income pays for my desired lifestyle. That's the money that flows in month over month, right? Most business owners today, you know this, if they take off for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, the revenue stops. And I wanted to build this life where if I took off, originally it was because I wanted to take off and travel more with my family, right? I think that's what drives a lot of us. And then with time, as I started seeing the things happen in my life that wasn't necessarily like what I was excited about. Like, I'll give you an example. I got divorced in 2018. That was not exciting. But I didn't work for 90 days and my business kept going. I showed up maybe five times to the office in 90 days and I kept making money. And it was like, wait a second, there's something deeper into this whole financial freedom than just travel in the world, especially if we see the way the world is today. Like, I really don't have a desire to travel Europe like I used to, or South right. America, or these different places. I don't have that desire. My kids are at that age where they're in private school, and with everything going on in the world, I don't have that. But to have the freedom of the money rolling in was really powerful for me. What I discovered along the way is that there was three major things. One is cash flow management. I don't care if I make a dollar or $1 million, I got to learn to manage my money. If I can't manage a dollar, I'm never going to manage $1 million. That was one thing. Number two is I needed to learn how to maximize my tax-free wealth, how to pay less to the horrible spending problems of the United States government and all the governments out there. Even more so, you look, since 2008, we've printed $20 trillion of currency in circulation, which is no different than the Roman Empire shaving the rounds from their citizens off the coins they distributed. So we're seeing the richer get richer and the poor get poorer. So that was the other thing. We've got to maximize that. And the third thing is I needed to leverage the banking institutions, because when we look at, if you've ever read the book Creature from Jekyll Island, when we look at that, the creature really is the banking system and parts of the government, not the government system itself, but politicians inside of it. And so what happens is when we have a crisis such as 9/11 or the 2008 market, subprime market crash, or coronavirus, it's just like Hillary Clinton says, is we can't ever let a good crisis go to waste. And what happens is they print currency, and then that currency is distributed to the banking system and to the politicians in a roundabout way. And then they're able to go to the marketplace and pay higher prices than the general public. They get richer, the poor get poorer. It's very, very simple how the whole scam works. And so it's like, how do we actually use the scam to our favor? How do we actually use derivative banking to our favor? So when I learned that along the way, it just became like this easy game of patterns. And I got to be able to create financial freedom based on what I wanted to create at this point in my life. And it shifts when we go through these different phases, when we connect our psychological, our emotional, and our spiritual state with it as well. So that's me in a nutshell over the last 15 years.
Right. You have given me so much fodder. There's no way we're going to unpack this in the next 12 minutes.
But let's start from at the very, more in the beginning, when you were a real estate agent, and kudos to you for growing and, you know, selling 75 houses a year. That's great for a lot of agents. And they'd be really excited about that. But in having my real estate license myself, I can, and you can probably attest to this, you find that most people who are in that environment, one, like you said, have no idea what passive income is, like, right. or leverage residual income, as you call it. Like, how did you, and obviously you got a mentor and you got some courses, but like, when did that shift happen? What did you invest in? How did you pick that to invest? Like, what was your first target market? You said, hey man, I'm going to make some passive income and I'm going to go big. What did you look at?
I first actually messed up and I started in speculation investing. And that was when the new construction boom was happening. Built a house for $350, sold it for $270. But I happened to do the deal with a company called CTX Mortgage, who I did a one-time close with. And in the middle of the building process, which took me 8 or 9 months, they folded up. And they folded up towards the end when I was supposed to convert from the construction note to long-term financing. And they were just writing shit off their books. So I made a deal with them that I would sell it for $270. They'd 1099 me, but they wouldn't throw it against my credit. I was like, done deal. Let's do it, right? And in the meantime, though, I had occupancy from the city. And so I wasn't making any payments on this house for about 7 or 8 months while it was stuck in limbo. It was complete, but it was stuck in limbo through the banking problem. And so I sold it on a lease option. And I had sold it with like $8,000 down or something, and then $2,600 a month payments. And 4 or 5 months in, they defaulted. So I got those payments. I got their option money. And then I sold the house. And I got paid a commission on it as well. So I ended up making a bunch of money on it. And that's where I realized, you know what, I need people making me payments more often. Right. I don't need to be making these capital, not the capital gains isn't fun and I love to do those and I still do them. I don't do it speculative though. I do it on the buy, not on the anticipation. But that was when I needed absolutely for sure different avenues, whether it's a real estate property or whether it's a business or some sort of thing paying my bank account every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beginning stages for me. And then I started buy and hold 2-bedroom, 1-bath condos, which I still own all of them today near the university in my local town, Weber State University. And I started paying them off because they were cheap. I think I paid like $35,000 when I first started. They're worth 150 or something now today. And when I owned them free and clear, I was like, I can either sell these and move that money into something else. Or then I had a friend say, hey, you need to meet this banker. And that's where I started learning how commercial banking worked, which was like freaking amazing, right? Because they don't really care about my personal, they care about how my business is run.
Sure.
And you have to personally guarantee them. But I mean, now I have line of credits on all my properties, not just those ones, right? I have commercial financing in place. And I was able to start from those first ones. And, you know, I just closed cash on a property on historic 25th Street in Ogden. It's one, it's like the oldest street in all of my, you know, a town, Ogden City, Utah, which is an amazing ski town. It's amazing. It's just a great place. I just paid cash for a commercial property on there. And then I worked through the commercial financing system, kind of like residential real estate people do. You know, what did they say? Buy, repair, renovate, refinance, whatever their thing
right.
is.
Right. The BRRRR strategy of some sort.
Right. So it's basically the BRRRR strategy. I'll pay cash, get it at a good deal, repair it, pull all my cash out, and then go do it again. And just keep accumulating more property.
What commercial assets are you buying now? Like, what are you looking for?
To me, I lean towards something that can be moved into residential.
Interesting.
Because if we look in 2000, this is my belief, 2019 was the real start of the crash of our economy. And it started with the commercial banking and commercial financing and banking. And what I see happen with the pandemic is I've heard it called the great accelerator. Meaning, like, give me an example. Stripe, I use Stripe as one of my merch accounts for my academy. They gave all of their employees the opportunity to get a $20,000 bonus and relocate to a cheaper marketplace anywhere in the United States in exchange for working at home and taking a 10% reduction in pay. And almost everyone did it, okay? So all the pandemic did was accelerate people working virtually, working from home, working mobile. And when we see that happening, you're looking at these major office space buildings like they're sitting empty.
Right.
And companies are going to start to figure out ways how to get out of those leases. And you already seen this happen with malls before COVID-19. Shopping, retail was already dying before COVID, right? And now you had to see them repurpose and reposition. Now, for me, I don't want to be the creative type to repurpose and reposition. Not to say there's not opportunity there. But what I want is I want the certainty of my investments, and shelter is the absolute certainty. So our next move that we're moving into is more multifamily, high residential apartment buildings that we can use commercial financing with, but we can do it in marketplaces, because right now, if you follow real estate trends, there's a huge migration pattern going on. A lot of people are leaving the communist states. A lot of people are leaving for less, like a cheaper lifestyle.
Yeah, cost of living right? Much lower, sure.
Right. So they're leaving it. And so when we see this mixed with low interest rates, you're going to see values go up in certain markets and values crash in others.
Right.
You can own high density residential commercial finance buildings in these marketplaces. The value is going to go up. And my philosophy has never been target the A series. I've always been like, let's target the working class.
Sure.
Because where the market's up and down, I got people that will be there and pay. You know, I think one of the challenges we got to pay attention to when we bring this up with the communist states, is you're going to see some of these draconian leaders start to put these eviction moratoriums, which could make it risky. So like, I don't want to do this in New Jersey. I don't want to do it in California. I don't want to do it in Washington State. I don't want to do it in the liberal areas because it puts me at risk. So you got to be smart in the areas that you're doing it, and you got to build a strong network.
Right, right. And so you're finding commercial buildings that you can convert then into multifamily housing. Is that the synopsis?
Yep. That's our next move. Yep.
How do you identify that? Like if somebody wanted to do that, like say I wanted to do that here in the Memphis market, how do I identify a building that I say, hey man, I think that'll work? Is there a particular has been previously used as, and this works well for that scenario?
So for me, it starts with zoning. I want to find buildings that are already zoned. I don't look for vacant buildings. I look for zoning spaces.
Okay.
And then when I see where the zoning space is, I look to see how I could repurpose it to where the marketplace is needed. Marketplaces needed affordable housing right now.
Sure.
Everywhere. The other thing that I look to repurpose as storage units, because people are attached to their things. So if I can repurpose it to a storage unit as well.
Right.
So it's all based on zoning. It's much more difficult to get things rezoned, because usually the people that run these planning commissions, they run planning commissions for a reason, because they're not the ones out there making things happen.
Right.
And so you want to be able to pick your battles. And to me, if you can find something that's already zoned so you can repurpose and all you need to do is get the permit, then work it out from there.
Right. Yeah. Because you're not fighting City Hall that's disinterested in your success, or actually not disinterested, just has no interest at all in your success one way or another. You're just another cog in the wheel. And if you're out of the way, then that's great. So yeah, if you can find an asset that's already zoned the way you want it, then you can convert it. So tell us about a project you've done and kind of how that went. Would love to hear kind of your step process on that.
So I'll give you an example. Was a project that I was in the middle of. I'm actually liquidating it now before I complete it. Is we found a residential property. It had a 3-bedroom, 1-bath on it. Okay. And it was 1.75 acres backed up to the Ogden River. And it was kind of in an industrial area. And it was a guy was living there. He had passed away. So it turned into a trust. And the brother who'd never, like, hadn't been their house in forever, he just needed to liquidate the asset. Now, they had put, like, some new appliances in it, but besides that, the house was wrecked, right? Like, when I say wrecked, it was dated. So what we ended up doing is we paid cash for the house for around, I don't know, $220,000 or something. And then we noticed that the zoning was M3, which in our area, we could do storage units, okay? So here we go. We were 1.75 acres. It's already zoned and approved. And yet no one's seeing it on radar. So we did. We bought the house. We remodeled the house. And it happened to be just built in a certain way that where it had like this extra piece on the back that was kind of weird, but it was the way the house was built that we turned in to the office space of the storage unit development. So we added a bath and you had an office and a bath. And then while we were working through the details to get the building plans and everything put together, we remodeled the house, put a tenant in there, kept the cash flow going in on our property, right?
Right.
And then we started to lay out the game plan to build out the storage units, got everything. You just have to get the building plans approved. You don't have to actually get get it turned over and rezoned. So that was good. And then we created the pro forma, and then we created the vision and the plan. And through there, we could then start to exercise and offer it off to investors. They bring an investor in so that we have the cash sitting there. Because for storage units, you have to have 12 months of operating capital sitting in the bank. And here's what's cool about storage units, if you guys don't know this. So you can use an SBA loan on those. Mm-hmm. So the bank will finance commercially 50% and SBA will finance 35%. So you can really finance 85% of these And your commercial finance is probably going to be 4.5 to 5%, depending on prime and what bank you're working with. SBA is like 3.75%. So you can finance 85% of $1.5 million project, and you're only in this maybe a couple hundred grand. And then all of a sudden you got the money set aside and you start marketing it, you put it out. So that's the most recent project. Now that project hasn't been completed at this point, but it's moving down that path of completion.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's a really good word of advice there, using the SBA and then having the bank back it up. That's a project we're actually working through a big boat in RV storage development right now. And then one of those things is getting the financing piece of that figured out. So do talk to us about the financing. Are you bringing investors on? Are you syndicating your deals? Are you doing it all just with your own resources? Or
the bigger deals, I love to bring in investors, because I love other people's money. Right? I love being able to leverage. Leverage is key. Now, on the smaller stuff, I just do it myself because I don't need it. But on the bigger projects, I like to bring investors in, and I like to have a clear operating agreement to where, hey, listen, not only am I a member, but I'm the manager, and you might be a member, but listen, I'm heading this boat.
Right.
Like I'm the one that's directing. You want to keep control of the deal, and you want to get investors that don't want to be as involved. There's a lot of people out there that are sitting on a lot of cash that they don't know how to structure these deals. So really the value is if you learn how to structure the deals and structure revenue. Revenue comes in over and over again.
Right. Learn how to structure the deal and learn how to structure the revenue for the investors. That's and for yourself, of course. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Let's jump. What are some pitfalls that you've learned along the way, or some pitfalls, things that surprised you?
Partners. You got to have the right partners. That's one. And I'm really trusting early on. And I've learned to vet my partners differently. So now every partner that I do a big deal with, I want to check their finances. I want to go in depth with their financial statements. I want to have a background check done on them. Right? Like I found a partner that I started in the deals with him, and that's why I'm actually unwinding on some stuff with him now. Had I done this perfect, you know, the right way sooner, I would have done the background check. I would have known he had a felony charge from 10 years ago for forgery. Right. So due diligence is key. Have a process to move through and really make sure you're making great decisions. Because as you start to grow, you'll tend to think you know it all, and you'll make decisions faster with less diligence.
Ah, that's a great piece of advice. Yeah, and those are things that they're easy to overlook. I mean, like you said, the more you know, the more you feel like you know what's going on. So it's like, oh, I got this. I get a good vibe from this guy. We hit it off. We can laugh and, you know, drink beer together, and it's great. But really, you know, you got to get in the weeds on those things, especially partners. So that's a great piece of advice. Let's jump to the final four, investing in bigger assets. If you were to give or take everything you know and distill that piece of advice, or distill everything you know down into one piece of advice to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Hard work is not the answer. I know a lot of hardworking people that are broke, that are not successful financially. The answer is, my belief is, the secret to success is your willingness to do what you don't feel like doing. And the other aspect is going to be, money is not real. Like if you can get this concept that money is not real, it's an illusion, it's a hallucination. I'm not saying you don't have to give attention to it. I'm not saying you got to participate in the illusion. It's not real though. Think about, now you might not go to his restaurants as often as you used to, but if you go to a restaurant and you order food, you usually get the check or whatever, you pay with a credit card. You give them a piece of plastic and they give you food, and they do some things on some digital stuff. You look at, since 2008, President Trump and President Obama have printed over $20 trillion with the Federal Reserve, which, by the way, the Federal Reserve is privately owned by who knows who. It's not audited. And all they do is print currency. In fact, we've noticed a currency shortage. That is one of the, a coin shortage. It is one of the biggest blatant proofs that the globalists and the elitists are stealing from the average human right now. We saw it in the Roman Empire. We're seeing it today. So if you can get that concept that money is not real, but systems are, and you can build systems to flow that currency into place. Like, for example, if you were smart, you figured out a way to get the EIDL loan of 150 grand. If you were smart, you figured out ways to get PPP that was forgiven. And if you look at the biggest, wealthiest, they got way more money from the PPP. And you look at the average American, they got $1,200.
Right.
So money is not real. Understand how to tap into the currency, flood it into your system, have a clear funnel to run it through so that it spits more money out the other side.
Right. No, that's absolutely brilliant. I love that. Investing in yourself. What's one thing you do to stay on top of your game?
So I believe there's four things when it comes to investing in ourselves. Number one is everyone needs a coach or a mentor. Number two is everyone needs to be a part of a mastermind, a network of people with a very similar outcome and focus, both with business, with finances, and your psychological and your emotional state, outcomes and value system. The third thing is I think everyone needs to be once a quarter going through some sort of virtual training academy, something of education. And then the fourth thing is full immersion. And I know that's difficult today with the communist America, but you need to get in person with other humans and you need to be around them for 3, 4, 5 days at a time, fully immersed in what you're doing. And then obviously you have your daily routine, morning, day, and evening routine, which is part of that should be prayer, meditation, reading books, breath work, really just getting centered and being the eye of the storm. So that would be my answer.
Man, that's awesome. All of those are golden. And if we can incorporate all of those, you'll be set for the path, or at least be right on your way on the path to success. What's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
For me, as I say, I speak my truth. I speak my voice. And what I mean by that is we have this inherent governing system inside of us of what is right or wrong. And we have to do what's right, be our best version of us, and we have to show others that we care. Now, part of that is we have to take a stand for what's coming at us.
Right.
And I think too easily today, people have the ability to conform because it's easier. They don't agree with what's going on, but they'll conform because they don't want to deal with it. So for me, is what I've done is I've created a community that is inside of my academy and where I am literally giving people a voice to believe in themselves. If we look back from our youth to today, we have been trained not to trust our own decision-making. We need to look for other resources, a financial advisor, a school teacher, a governor, a president, someone else. Listen, I'm here right now making a difference. This podcast is me doing this, making a difference. Because it's going to light something inside of you to believe in you, validate yourself, trust that you can make great decisions, and that you can always correct and continue.
That's awesome. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Follow me on Instagram. The WGR is one of the best places to connect with me. Just send me a DM, slide up in my DMs. Or you can get me on the new Parler, right? I'll throw that out there. If you guys aren't on Parler, get on there, the conservative site. For social media, the WGR as well. Pretty much look me up anywhere, the WGR.
Yeah, Colton Lindsay, thanks for coming on today, man. That was great. Certainly appreciate your insight. Man, you've given us a lot to chew on, a lot of actionable steps. And this, this has been awesome. So thanks for sharing your knowledge and insights with us.
Yep, cool. Awesome.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.